98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. 4 o'clock reset.
Everything you need to know all in one spot every day at 4 o'clock. We hit the reset button on the Burns and Gambo show. Start the show over with the latest news making headlines here on the Burns and Gambo show, live from the Ak Chin Community Studios. Jordan Bird filling in for John Gambadoro today. The seven words that will end these dark times for the Arizona Diamondbacks, and they come from the Twitter account of Steve Gilbert, who covers the team for dbacks.com and mlb.com. Those seven words are: D-backs Archie Bradley has shaved his head.
It's over.
Oakland might not even show up tonight. I mean, why would you with this news?
It's over.
The Diamondbacks are destined to end the slump tonight.
It's done. It's over. They're going to win tonight. Feel it. They're going to win because Archie Bradley shaved his head. We're joking, but clearly the team needing to do something to shake things up a little bit. Clay Buchholz confirmed to us moments ago he did not shave the beard, just the head. And it's not a smooth, bald head. It's just kind of the clipper cut
down
at the bottom.
Reports have been deceiving. Also news, John Ryan Murphy batting third and DHing tonight for the D-backs.
Yes, that is the what we were wondering, who was going to play DH for the Diamondbacks. We got our answer. It is going to be John Ryan Murphy, and he is hitting third. Bob Brenly was a guest earlier today on the Bickley and Marotta show. Told a story about when he was a player and an interim manager and what he did to bring some fun back into a struggling baseball team.
I played for a team in San Francisco one time. Danny Ozark was our interim manager, and he had the starting lineup filled out on the lineup card, and he put the eight position players. He put one bat from each guy in a bat bag and then had us just draw the bats out blindly. And that was the bat you had to use that night, whether it was yours or not. Try something different. You know, yeah. This feels a little different. You know, just kind of maybe take your focus off the negativity that you've been experiencing lately and have some fun with it.
First pitch tonight, 6:35, Patrick Corbin versus Sean Manea. You'll hear it here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Maybe it's just, and it honestly has nothing to do with Bradley's beard, but you're back on the West Coast. You're playing a team that on paper you are better than. Maybe this will be the series, or at least that's the hope, that this is the series that you finally start breaking out of this funk.
Chris Paul has been ruled out for Game 6 of the Western Conference Finals between the Rockets and the Warriors. That Game 6 scheduled to be played tomorrow, right next door to where the Diamondbacks are tonight, there in Oakland, California. Tough break for Mike D'Antoni, tough break for the Houston Rockets, and it's going to remind Suns fans of losing Amari Stoudemire and Boris Diaw against the Spurs. The Rockets are one win away from advancing to the NBA Finals, but they might have to win that one game without Chris Paul, depending on his availability for Game 7.
Well, and that's the key, because right now it's a definite for Game 6, and there is some doubt that if he can play a Game 7. So really, it just completely shifted the momentum of the series, where you thought the Rockets might have the potential to do the unthinkable and knock off the Warriors before we even get to the Finals. Now it feels like it's predestined. Golden State will win again.
Game 6 tonight, the Cavaliers and the Boston Celtics. If the Cavs win at home, they will force a Game 7 on Sunday. Lose, and that could be LeBron James' last game in a Cleveland Cavaliers uniform.
And you got Braun at 40.5 points tonight,
the
right?
Over-under on Braun points, 40.5. You got the over or the under?
Oh, I'm taking the over. I'm taking the over, because even if the Cavs go down losing in this game, you know you're getting the last gasp punches from LeBron James going down.
I tend to think so as well. But our top story of the day today comes from the Phoenix Suns, who began the process of the pre-draft workouts today. They had about a half dozen players in. Nobody super noteworthy. Trey Holder from ASU was the most recognizable name on the list. Trevon Blewett from Xavier was there as well. But it was also an opportunity to talk to Ryan McDonough and to hear from Ryan McDonough about their plans at number one. And to be honest with you, it's going to be one of the last opportunities to hear from Ryan. As he said, he will not address the media again until the final pre-draft workout, which might not be until 2 or 3 days before the draft. Talked a lot about DeAndre Ayton. There's been a lot of speculation about what position DeAndre Ayton will play. Everybody knows he's a center. Does he?
I think a lot of it was schematically they had him playing the four a lot with Ristich, so he was guarding away from the basket on the perimeter. You know, in the NBA, obviously, he's a center. He's a five. You know, he slides well. He moves his feet well. You know, he's a tremendous athlete at that size in terms of, you know, strength, fluidity, coordination, all that.
And his defensive issues, not an issue for Ryan.
I think, you know, what we've seen, what I've seen on film and in person so far is a lot of it is, you know, just experience. I think knowing defensive rotations, when to switch, when to rotate, that just comes with time and with playing. You know, I think he has a high-level feel for the game, especially on the offensive end of the court. And from my experience, guys who have that in the offensive end of the floor usually are in time able to translate that to the defensive end of the floor as well.
I'm not surprised that there is deficiencies or perceived deficiencies in his game on the defensive side, because every time that we've heard of this, it goes back to the same thing, effort and intensity, basically. To me, those are all easily fixable, and it might just work itself out naturally that the guy matures both physically and mentally and becomes the type of player that you want him to be. I think a lot of times in these lead-ups with the NBA, we forget how young these players actually are. They're 7 feet. They're 250 pounds. They're going to be future millionaires. But there's still a 19-year-old kid in there. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, there's going to be times where maybe the lack of intensity that you want as an NBA general manager might not be there. But that also is sometimes coming against inferior opponents at the college level where you can get by with 80% and still be a force to reckon with.
Yeah, the idea about him playing center, I mean, we've talked a lot about this today, and at no point have I ever seen him on the record, him being DeAndre Ayton, on the record as saying, I don't want to play center.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been sort of widely presumed by a lot of people that part of the reason why he chose U of A was that they sold him on not having to play center, and that his defensive intensity when having to play center in college hasn't been great because maybe he doesn't have a tremendous love for it. But Ryan McDonough made it clear, and I think just about every NBA team that would consider drafting DeAndre Ayton is going to make it clear. You're not here to be a four, you're here to be a five. So the if there is, and I can't confirm for sure that there are, but if there are any hangups from Ayton about playing center at the NBA level, it'd be better for all involved for him to get over that fairly quickly, because that's just not what he's going to play at this level, and everybody knows it.
You might think you're a four, but you're not. So the quicker that you come to that reality, the better. Yep. Now, the thing that's interesting to me is, now, U of A, there is this idea that one of the reasons they got him there was because he could play the four. But if they don't have Ristich, then if he goes to U of A, it's not like he's still playing the four. He's playing the five.
Sure.
The only reason he was allowed to play the four is because they also had another 7-footer on the roster.
Yeah. Ryan McDonough also talked a lot about Luka Doncic, who we should not ignore. I mean, even though we all believe it's going to be eight when it's all said and done, Ryan says he's seen a lot of Doncic in person.
We've seen him play a lot. We've seen him. I've personally seen him four or five times in the last 7 or 8 months. You know, Pat Connolly's seen him. Igor seen him more than anybody. So yeah, we've seen Luka play a lot.
And physically, Ryan McDonough says he has no concerns.
You know, he's able to jab and create his own shot. He's able to lower his shoulder to create space and overpower defenders. He's adept at getting to the free throw line. So I don't have concerns with him physically. I think if you look at some of the all NBA teams, you know, that just came out yesterday, some of those guys are better maybe basketball players than athletes. You know, would they test off the chart in terms of running and jumping and things like that? Maybe not, but you put the ball in their hands and they know what to do. And I think that's how I describe Luka.
And that would seem to be Doncic's game. I mean, I know a lot of people want to believe that the debate is over and it's done. I don't think it's over. I mean, I don't think it's going to be over for the Suns. Do they have a lean? I'm sure. Do they have a preference? Probably. But does that mean they're going to stop doing their homework or thinking about what they're going to do? No, I don't think that means they're going to stop.
McDonough was also asked, when will you decide on the number one pick? We don't have the sound right here, but he basically said, well, probably a week or so out from the NBA draft. And he also made it known that the NBA does not want them divulging that, when they have reached a conclusion.
Oh, yeah, because at the end of the day, it's a TV show.
Absolutely.
They do want to set up some sort of drama.
Absolutely. But I think that it's going to happen even before that. I think we're going to have the Suns will have a real good idea on who they're going to go number one, even before we're a week away from the NBA draft.
I think they probably know now.
You just,
You just have to make sure.
Yeah.
You're in the process now of information.
It's almost like
gathering.
A detective where you have a suspect on who you think is the guilty party. Now you just need to find the evidence to back up your claim.
Yeah. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, Jordan Bird filling in for Gambo today, the quarterback whisperer talked about his old team's rookie quarterback. It's his analysis of Josh Rosen. You'll hear from Bruce Arians next here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. Okay, it's 1001, 1002. Oh, I got it. It took. Is this a common thing? Have you done this before, Andy? No. Okay.
Let's figure it. Throw it.
Well,
in
I just wasn't sure. You know, on the morning show, if every time we talk about the quarterback whisperer, if you play Careless Whisper,
I totally would though. And if I get a chance to do it next week, I'm going to.
See, I love this song because where I tailgate at for Arizona Cardinal games,
yeah.
We walk down this path, and there's this elderly gentleman who is in a, one of motorized scooter,
okay.
And plays saxophone on the street corner. His name's
okay.
Eddie. Great guy. We always give him, you know, tips, whatnot, always talk to him. This is one of the only two songs that he knows. It's Careless Whisper and Sanford and Son, the theme from Sanford and Son. I swear to God,
and
those are the only two that he knows.
He just plays Careless Whisper. And the theme from Sanford and Son over and over
He'll
again.
He'll see us walking down the way and know that that's his cue to tune up the Sanford and Son.
That's good. Andy, you got to promise me at the end of this segment, you give me the theme song to Sanford and Son. At the end of the segment, I
got
to hear that. Careless Whisper from Wham leads us into the quarterback whisperer, Bruce Arians, who, as legend has it, he was on with Doug and Wolf this morning, and I don't have the audio, but he said it this morning. He was doing the interview over the phone while at a liquor store in Georgia, stocking up for the Memorial Day weekend.
Well, to me, that's honestly...
so BA.
I feel like that's a little amateur hour, though, in all honesty.
Look at you telling Bruce Arians had a drink. This should be good.
I feel like BA in full-on retirement mode, his Memorial Day weekend would have started on Thursday or Wednesday.
That's a good point.
He would have already had his provisions by Friday morning.
And I'm not judging, man. If I didn't have to work today, I'd probably be doing the same thing. I heard Brett Bickley say that earlier. I'd probably be doing exactly the same thing. But while he was busy stocking up for the Memorial Day weekend, he took a few minutes out of his day to talk about Josh Rosen, who once again is being called the most NFL-ready quarterback in the draft.
Oh, I think he was probably the most ready guy in the draft, you know. He played in a really good offense. He's a bright guy, you know. I would say, hey, just let your football do the talking. And just blend in.
Let your football do the talking and blend in. And it was the last 3 seconds of that 17-second soundbite that got both of us wondering exactly how Bruce Arians and Josh Rosen would have coexisted if BA were still the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals.
Before today, I would have said I thought they would get along. And not to say that this is inflammatory or anything.
Of course not.
The first 14 seconds are him praising Josh Rosen. But I would have thought that they would have been thick as thieves. I mean, I think that there's a little bit of BA in Josh Rosen, the swagger, the bravado. I'm a little surprised that he would have wanted him to bring it back a little bit, dial it back a little bit, because to me, that doesn't seem like Bruce Arians.
Mm-mm.
And
no.
Maybe it's all because he's a rookie and hasn't performed or accomplished anything at the NFL level. But it was surprising to me. I thought he would be all about the confidence and the attitude and the swagger.
I mean, if there was ever a coach in the history of anything that I think would have appreciated a quarterback saying, yeah, there were 9 mistakes made ahead of me. Okay, you know what? On second thought, there were 3 mistakes made ahead of me. We won't count the offensive lineman and the running back. I mean, that sounds
BA.
That's kind of like a Bruce Arians thing to say, isn't it? It's kind of like, and I think you're right. Bruce is always, when he was here, B.A. always had kept the rookies kind of at arm's length.
Absolutely.
For the most part. And yes, while there were some who contributed right away, the Tyrann Mathews of the world, the David Johnsons, who didn't even, you know, even he, as a kick returner, he contributed right away, but as a running back, he didn't start playing right away. I even think last year to a guy like Buda Baker, it took Buda Baker way too long to be in the regular rotation for playing time. I mean, there's...
And that was even with a struggling Tyrann Mathieu.
I mean, they really... Because B.A. is, as his standard answer has been, most rookies aren't ready to play until Thanksgiving or so. So I just wonder, like this cut from Arians talking about Rosen getting a chance to show he can beat out Sam Bradford.
Well, yeah, that's the opportunity. He's gotten the opportunity that a lot of rookies don't get. You know, we used to practice on both fields so that we could see everybody. But, I mean, with him getting first-team reps, with Sam sitting out, that's his opportunity to show that he can beat him out.
And that, in its essence, is very different from Bruce Arians and the way he used to run these OTAs. Two fields. The rookies practice on one, and the vets practice on the other. And if you're good enough to get the call-up, so to speak, you get moved from field two to field one. Well, there's no field one and field two anymore. They're all practicing on the same field. When they do individual work, they're on the separate fields. But for the team stuff, there's not, you know, the minor league field and the major league field.
Yeah.
There's just one field. And in that scenario, it's a lot easier for Josh Rosen to show, I can compete with Sam Bradford. I can compete with Mike Glennon. In the old system, he'd have been over there on that other field and would have had to earn that promotion over to the main field.
We would have been talking about Rosen looks great, but it's against guys who may not even be in the NFL this upcoming season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being on that secondary field. The other thing that's just that's intriguing about this is the way that BA just, like you touched on it, the way he, I don't want to say pigeon-held rookies, but when you look at the rookie classes that he had, they really had to establish themselves in a sense before they came to the forefront. Now, maybe that's more of an indictment on those rookies themselves, the DJ Humphreys.
The Robert Kamdichi.
Absolutely.
Although Robert Kamdichi, yeah, I mean, it was justified holding.
We're still
back,
waiting,
right,
for Robert Kamdichi to do something.
Sure, you bet.
So, in those respects, the way that Bruce Arians kind of, you know, came up with nicknames and never would give too much credit to the rookies, maybe that was warranted, and maybe it would be different if Rosen is as great as everyone says and B.A. was seeing it with his own eyes every day.
But on the other hand, I mean, this is Bruce Arians we're talking about. This is Ben Roethlisberger and Andrew Luck and Peyton Manning, and this is the quarterback whisperer. So to think at its core that Josh Rosen is better off not having Bruce Arians coach him, I find that very difficult to believe and really, at its essence, almost laughable. I mean, at the end of the day, he's Bruce Arians, and if he would have had a chance to mentor him, coach him, teach him, I still think that would have. And I'm not saying that Mike McCoy won't benefit Rosen. I'm just talking specifically about B.A., his personality, and whether it would have meshed with Rosen and his personality. I don't know, but with B.A.'s knowledge of the position and how to teach that position, I still think at the end of the day, personality differences aside, B.A. would have done more good for Rosen than bad. I just don't know.
Oh, I agree.
I just don't know if it would have happened as fast as it might under Mike McCoy and Steve Wilks. I mean, I could see Josh Rosen being the starter of this football team very early on. I don't know if it would have happened that quickly with Bruce Arians.
I agree. And also, I mean, I hate to bring up this name, but when you look back to Matt Leinart, there was obviously a disconnect in personality between himself and Ken Whisenhunt,
mm-hmm,
that ultimately ended his time here.
Sure.
Now, Rosen seems to be far more talented, far more capable of the job.
Far more intelligent, yeah.
All of the above. Anything else that you want to tag onto that, Rosen seems more more ready for the NFL than Leinart was. But the bottom line still remains that it doesn't come down to teaching or the knowledge that Bruce Arians has. To me, it's all about personality. And would there have been a situation where Bruce Arians and Josh Rosen would have butted heads? Yeah, I can totally see that, just based off of their personalities.
They kind of seem so similar that sometimes similar personalities tend to.
Exactly. And maybe, like, and I don't disagree with you. I mean, Rosen would have been probably better served with a Bruce Arians. It would not have done him any harm. But I also think having a defensive-minded coach in Steve Wilks and having an offensive coordinator with head coaching experience who kind of knows how to balance the line between player management, I think this is a beneficial situation just as much so.
Yeah. All right, give me, Andy, you've got the Oh, no, I was looking. Well, this is fine, too. Yeah, give me the Sanford and Son.
This will be good background music for what you want.
All right.
This is Eddie on the street corner at Maryland and 95th Avenue. Every Cardinal game.
Playing this or Careless Whisper.
Yep.
And that's the two-song repertoire. Now, with this as the background, give me a little Bruce Arians at the liquor store. Can't do it? It's on the same slide? All right. You gonna fix it? All right, never mind.
So are you still in the grocery store right now?
Yes, I'm in the wine section right now, Will.
Nice. Nice.
All right, is it going to be red or white this weekend?
I think it's going to be a combo. Definitely a combo weekend.
Now, listen.
And a few beers, too.
I bet, babe. No doubt about it.
Now give me Sanford and Son again.
I feel like every weekend is a combo weekend for VA.
Hey, you know what? I'm here to tell you right now, it's 4:27 in the afternoon. In an hour and 33 minutes, it's going to be a combo weekend for me, too.
It's 7:27 where Bruce Arians is at. He's already done.
Could a radical idea save the Rockets despite Chris Paul's idea? Or his injury, I should say. We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Get an update on our Twitter poll question of the day, and for that we turn things back over to Andy Greenberg here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update presented by Sanderson Ford.
We added a second question, didn't we?
Yes, we did, and we're going to go with that one first. Okay. So you set the over-under for LeBron's point total tonight at 40.5.
Indeed.
And I asked our listeners and Twitter followers
I guess what
they're taking. Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
71% took the over.
Close. 66% took the over.
Okay.
34 the under. And the first question we asked today was, if the Suns draft DeAndre Ayton, what year will they break the streak and make the NBA playoffs? 48% say 2 years from now, 2020. 35% say next season. 9% 3 years from now, 2021. 8% 2022 or beyond.
I can take one more year.
Of losing or
of not making
what?
The playoffs. I can take one more year of not being okay with it, but understanding that they're a young basketball team and all that stuff. But I don't know if I can take much more than that.
If you have the number one pick this year, then plus whatever thing you do this offseason, then you have next year's offseason, depending on how much salary cap space and everything you have.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't make the playoffs by 2020, to me, that's the end of Ryan McDonough. He has 2 years to make the playoffs.
I'll buy that. Yeah, I'll buy that.
So to me, the clock is ticking now.
Yeah.
You have 2 years.
And I think he knows that. I think he knows that he has to do something splashy to impress Devin Booker this summer, that he has to – that you can't be in constant rebuild mode. At some point, you have to have some results. And if it's not this season, then it is definitely the 2019-2020 season.
Well, and also, when you look at successful teams, the building pieces, the building blocks are in place a lot of times. The groundwork is laid years in advance. I mean, the Cardinals' success, a large part of that went to Denny Green for the 08 Super Bowl run.
Yep.
You take a look at what happened in Philadelphia. Sam Hinkie's out. Ryan McDonough could be in a similar situation where the fruits of his labor don't pay off until he's already dismissed as the general manager.
Somewhere Ryan McDonough is driving in the valley and he's just shouting at his car radio, "Don't remind me." Yeah, don't remind me, Jordan. I appreciate that. Mike D'Antoni, we're going to be fine without Chris Paul.
If he's there, great. Good for him. If he isn't, we have enough guys and it's time for somebody else to step up. We got plenty of guys over there that will have some fresh legs, that's for sure. So we'll be all right. But we just got to continue what we're doing, and then we'll find that way.
Have you seen my rotation? I'm only playing 7 guys. Yeah. We've got some fresh legs over there. We'll be okay. Chris Paul ruled out for Game 6. The Rockets lead the Warriors 3-2, can eliminate the defending champion. They just need to win one of these next two. They're not going to have Chris Paul for Game 6, and I'll bet you a lunch right now they're not going to have him for Game 7 either. Just a guess.
And if
I'd
they
be
don't.
Surprised if they did.
If they don't, they're done. I mean, this is as much as James Harden has been MVP caliber at times in this playoffs and is looked at as the motor of the Houston Rockets. Chris Paul won that game yesterday,
no doubt.
There,
with James Harden was 0 for 11 from the three-point stripe. Chris Paul's offense and his defense in particular. I mean, if you look at how well the Warriors have been defended, I can't believe I'm saying this about a Mike D'Antoni team, but how well they were defended against by the Rockets last night, yeah, that was a Chris Paul production. And I just don't know, unless James Harden, who has missed his last 23-pointers, unless he just gets crazy hot and just goes off, I don't see how the Rockets can win this series either unless they get Chris Paul back for Game 7. And even then, I don't know if they can beat the Warriors.
I hate to bring the Suns into this conversation because right now they have no business in a conversation about playoffs, but this kind of speaks to the situation in Phoenix with Devin Booker. Everyone looks at as you have this budding superstar, and you know, some people may not think that a point guard, or you know, you got Brandon Knight, that's a good enough point guard. To me, this illustrates the future of Phoenix. That as great as Devin Booker could potentially be, he needs a point guard. He needs someone to facilitate for him. And maybe you look at that as a knock against Luka Doncic or whatever the case may be. But what this proved is that even with James Harden being an MVP-caliber player, the Rockets could be doomed with nothing having to do with James Harden.
Sure, it has everything to do with Chris Paul. Now, our good friend John Gambadoro, who is off today? He's up in Flagstaff.
I like how you phrase that. Like he's a guest to the show. Like a guest,
yeah. Maybe you've heard of this guy. His name is John Gambadoro. He's got the one who's got the billboard there on the Santan Freeway.
He breaks stories all day.
He breaks stories all day long, and he's got a super hot wife. Just ask, he'll tell you. I spoke to him on the phone today, and he had a really interesting idea that I threw by you, and you didn't exactly toss it out the window. His idea, if it were him, he would consider not playing James Harden in Game 6 and resting him for Game 7. In essence, conceding Game 6 of the series, since you don't have Chris Paul and you know your chances of winning Game 6 without Chris Paul are nil, and resting James Harden so you get the very best James Harden for Game 7, putting all of your eggs into that basket. I thought it was laughable, but there is some thought behind it.
Well, I mean, yeah, there is some. I mean, it's not like, though, that Harden is LeBron right now and that looks fatigued and looks tired and like he could use the rest.
I know. Is he 0 for his last 20 from the three-point line because he's fatigued?
But on the same flip side of that, what breaks you out of a shooting slump? Having a game off or putting up more shots?
Or shooting, right.
And shooting your way out of this slump. This whole idea, though, is predicated on the idea that Chris Paul is ready for Game 7. So what happens if that's not the case? What happens if Paul is done for 6 and 7, you rest Harden, ruin an opportunity, albeit very slight, to actually beat Golden State in Oakland, and now you're down to you put yourself in your own elimination game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to speak for him. Gambo's theory was basically that without Chris Paul, your chance of beating the Warriors in Golden State is zero. Zero. You have no shot. And it's hard to argue with that, but you can't say it's zero. I mean, it can't be zero. Maybe it's 2%. Maybe it's 5%. But it's not zero. Mm-hmm. And as long as you have a shot and you've got an opportunity to put them away, you can't just concede.
I agree with you. I mean, that's what you're doing. You're putting yourself in your own elimination situation.
Right.
Where right now, yes, I think I asked you earlier, what would you put the percentage at for Houston to actually go in and win that game?
Less than 5%.
And I'm in agreement with you.
But greater than 0.
Yes, there still is that chance.
Yep, it's somewhere between those two.
And to say that we're going to rest this guy in hopes that, you know, it will do him well for Game 7 and that we'll get Chris Paul back, if you don't get Chris Paul back, then you just wasted an opportunity.
Can you imagine for just a second the conversation? Okay, so you're up 3-2. You've got the defending champs on the ropes, and you quit.
Yeah, that's what you're doing.
You quit. We give.
You're waving the white flag.
Waving the white flag. We'll live to fight another day. We quit. It's outside the box thinking. It's too outside of the box. Gambo needs to get back in the box.
D'Antoni needs to play more than 7 players. Maybe that's the solution here.
That would help. That would help. And Harden hits a 3 or 2. There's one quick number about this series that blew me away. I got to find it here real quick because it was, here it is. Kevin Durant in the fourth quarter of the Western Conference Finals is 3 for 16.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
I think he made one shot yesterday in the fourth quarter. One. He's 3 for 16 in the fourth quarter of these games so far.
That, I mean, if that's if it, just a slight increase in that, and we might already be talking about a series win.
Possibly. I still think the Warriors are going to win.
I agree.
I just don't think, they have the pedigree the Warriors or the Rockets don't. And if Chris Paul's out, forget it.
I know we got a break here, but you said something earlier. Even though both of them are facing 3-2 deficits, your confidence level in a Cavs-Warriors final is still your number one choice.
I still think that's the finals we're going to get. I do. You don't.
I mean, just based off of Boston being up 3-2, I would think the best chance right now is Boston-Golden State. But number two is Golden State and Cleveland.
Can you judge young quarterbacks by how they perform in OTAs? Or is that just unfair? We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
ArizonaSports.com just got bigger. ArizonaSports.com just got stronger. ArizonaSports.com just got better. The most influential sports writer in Arizona sports history brings his provocative, opinionated column exclusively to ArizonaSports.com. And there's no subscription required. Read Dan Bickley only at ArizonaSports.com. Steve Burns.
You are acting like a brat today, man.
John Gambadoro.
You ready to move on? Oh, I've been ready for about 3 minutes. I'm just waiting for you, brother.
Burns and Gambo. Afternoons 2 to 6. 98.7 FM. Arizona's sports station.
It's kind of our Allen Iverson moment here on the Burns and Gambo Show with Jordan Bird filling in for Gambo today. We are talking about practice. We are talking about OTAs. We're talking about guys wearing helmets and shorts and no pads and nobody's hitting each other and nobody's doing anything like that.
We're talking about practice, man.
Well, thanks, Alan, for confirming that.
We ain't talking about the game.
No, we're not. No,
we're talking about practice,
it's,
man.
It's the truth. We're talking about practice. And that's why Kurt Warner says, great, nice positive reviews so far about Josh Rosen, but to quote Allen Iverson, we're talking about practice.
I don't think we should overread too much, because OTAs are usually pretty simple. You're not seeing a whole lot. First time out, playbook is small. You're really just into the basics. So, I mean, I always think it's a good start. I think the great thing that Josh has gotten a lot of reps early, and I think reps, anytime you're getting a lot of reps, that helps the process and gives people a chance to see you and what you're capable of.
Now, I said, don't get me wrong. It's a good sign that we're hearing good things about
him. It's way too early. I mean, there's a lot of things, even into preseason games where young guys can look really, really good because things are very, very simple. And then things start heating up as you get into the regular season. And, and that's what it's all about, is being able to handle that stuff and manage it well. But again, I think it's all a good sign that you're hearing good things every time he goes on the football field. And we'll just have to see how this thing plays out.
But as he said, we're not really going to know about Josh Rosen until it's a Sunday in the fall NFL regular season game. He goes out there and plays. We won't really know about how prepared he is for that moment until that moment comes.
Absolutely. Completely agree. But in the meantime, all Josh Rosen can do is excel at the activities that are placed in front of him.
Indeed.
And that appears
well
to be the
That's
case
right, that would
right
appear
now.
To be the case so far.
And so what else can he do? There are no games to be played right now. There are no preseason practices or training camp scrimmages. This is all that he has been allowed to do so far. And it's better than the alternative, him going out there and everyone saying, he's a rookie, it'll take time, he'll eventually get a hold of the offense, he'll be, by all indications, he has excelled at what has been placed on his plate so far.
And not to kind of in juxtaposition with the Rosen situation right now is what's going on in Kansas City. Now, the benefit that Patrick Mahomes has, one, he started an NFL game. He played in Week 17, and it played well last year. I mean, I think that was kind of the performance that made everybody go, oh, okay, we know why everybody's so excited about Patrick Mahomes. He played very well. And yet, during OTAs for the Chiefs so far, he struggled so much to the point that during the open session of practice that the media were allowed to see, they felt compelled to ask Andy Reid about it. And that story made like national news in the sense that NFL.com, ProFootballTalk.com all did stories in the last 12 hours or so. Why is Patrick Mahomes 5-for-14 with an interception in 11-on-11 drills? Why did he throw an interception during 7-on-7 drills so far during Chiefs practice? They felt compelled to ask Andy Reid about that. Hey, is he all right? Is he doing okay? Because that doesn't look so good.
This doesn't mean anything. I mean, Kurt Warner said it's practice. But as of right now, what would you rather have, Josh Rosen? The way that he has gone out and performed, or have a performance that's similar to Pat Mahomes? I mean, it's simple.
Right now, today, I'd rather have Josh Rosen. But if I could have Josh Rosen with a start in the NFL under his belt already and 1 year of being in the league and sort of watching and observing, I think that situation is better. The one that Patrick Mahomes
is in. Of course, but to me that also casts Mahomes in a bad light, and on the flip side makes Rosen look good.
Well, in that he's been here for a year, that Mahomes has been around for a year, that he played in an NFL game, so for him he should be further along the dial than Josh Rosen is right now, and yet, based off of how he's performed in OTA so far, he's not.
To me, it extends beyond what Mahomes has done in OTAs on the stat sheet. When you listen to some of his comments after OTAs, it almost sounds like a rookie when he's talking about the steps that he needs to take to command a huddle, to understand the offense. If anything, that sounds like the rookie.
Yeah, I mean, this from year one to now year two, I mean, first off, I mean, just calling the play in the huddle. I was talking about earlier, you can focus on more things now that you're comfortable calling the play. And so now that I'm comfortable calling the play, I can focus on snap count. I can focus on the man zone IDs and what make this offense so good. And so for me, this being in year two, I feel a lot more comfortable with that.
But I do also think, in fairness to Mahomes, he had a lot longer of a journey to make than Rosen did. In the sense that when Mahomes came into the league, everybody knew, okay, this kid's a project.
Absolutely.
And this is going to take some time. And yeah, he's got a strong arm, but he's, you know, West Coast guy.
Big 12 quarterback.
Big 12 quarterback who's, but you know what? Okay, I'm glad you said that, because again, it reminds us all, or I'm going to remind us all, that Big 12 quarterbacks have not had a lot of success in this league in the last 10 years, including, I might add, the one who's here with the Arizona Cardinals and Sam Bradford. A lot of that has been health dictated, obviously. But if you go back and look at the history of first-round quarterbacks taken out of the Big 12 the last 10 years, it's not good. It's not good at all.
And maybe that's the key right now, especially when we're in this microcosm comparing Josh Rosen to Pat Mahomes, where Josh Rosen was more in an NFL-style yep. offense in college. So things like playing under center or calling a play in a huddle are not new theories to him. This is stuff that he had already done at UCLA. On the flip side, maybe it's a bit of a process for Mahomes to get used to that kind of stuff. All that being said, it's still an advantage to me for the Arizona Cardinals and Josh Rosen that he is this far evolved. And maybe that's his background at UCLA or just his own natural intelligence, whatever the case may be. I like where he's at right now, especially when you compare him to other quarterbacks.
The good news, quote, I don't think it's out of the question to say that he could end up being a Hall of Famer, maybe one of the 15 or 20 greatest to play the game, close quote. You want to hear the bad news about DeAndre Ayton? You'll hear it next on the Burns and Gambo Show with Jordan Bird filling in.